Well, good morning. This is Lon Woodbury. We're back again with the Woodbury Report. It is May 23rd, 2017, and we are going to talk about adoption today. I've got Norman Teeble on the line. Norm, good morning. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Lon. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be with you.
Well, this is going to be very interesting. Now, Norm is the founder and president of Three Points Center down in Utah. And he established that about 3 years ago. That was after 18 years of working in treating adolescents and research. And been very successful. The school is coming along fine. He was awarded the 2017 Bellardi Humanitarian Award from the American Adoption Congress. So that's good when your peers say you're doing a good job, too. Not easy to come by. So congratulations.
Thank you, Lon. I was very, very honored and complete shock, but very kind of them.
Well, that's very good, and it's impressive. Well, topic today is what's driving my adopted child. So let's start off. What is it? What makes this adopted children sometimes go off the rails or do some really weird things? What's driving them?
You know, Lon, it's really, really fascinating. The more we study behavioral epigenetics and the brain and neural development, the more we find answers to some of the common questions that adoptive parents have. And for example, oftentimes we'll hear the question, do birth parent genes set a child's path for good? Or if a child is traumatized during the early period of attachment, can that be reversed? And another common question, why do children adopted at birth sometimes demonstrate symptoms consistent with children who are adopted later in life? Those are important questions for adoptive parents. And the more we study neural development, both pre-birth and post-birth, it's really fascinating what we're learning.
Well, that sounds like it comes into the nature versus nurture debate that's been going on for decades and decades. But would you define a term, epigenetics? Just what do you mean by that?
Epigenetics is at its core is how the environment, even prenatally, can shape the way each of our genes unfold. And so what we're learning, for example, we're all aware that there are a number of substances, if taken while a fetus is in utero, that can be toxic to the fetus. But yet we're also learning that the environment can also have an impact on the fetus in the way that the genes unfold, even prenatally. And let me, if I may, share with you an example of that.
Sure.
In World War II, there was the Holland blockade in which Nazi Germany sought to create a famine and starve the population of Holland. And so they created this blockade. And so obviously a number of the citizens of Holland struggled to find food, struggled to eat. Some researchers smarter than I thought it would be interesting to study women who were pregnant during the famine, but who then gave birth after the war, when the famine was no longer a significant concern. So what happened is they studied these infants and their development up through adulthood, up into their later years. And some of these infants are now grandparents and great-grandparents. And what they found was for these children who were in utero during the famine but had plenty of food afterwards, they had significant levels of heart disease and obesity. And the question is, well, but they had food after when they were born. What we learned is every calorie counted. And so when these fetuses were in utero, their bodies and minds prepared them to live in an environment that they were experiencing at the moment. So that when they took their first breath, they were prepared to live in an environment of famine. Therefore, every calorie counted.
Mm-hmm. And so it just continued to, and then that had it was tough on their system.
Exactly, exactly. So a more recent study that illustrates a very similar point, some researchers studied women who were pregnant in their last trimester during the 9/11 attacks. And there were about 1,700 women who were studied who were diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder in the New York metro area during 9/11. They have tracked the children who were since born, and these kids are about 15, 16 years old now, And they have elevated levels of post-traumatic stress or anxiety themselves. The children do. Now, they didn't have any conscious acknowledgement of 9/11. Obviously, they were in utero. But the fact that their mothers went through it, it impacted the way that they developed and their genes unfolded neurologically, so that when they were born, they were prepared to live in an environment that had high stress and high risk. Oh, that's so they were more alert and more attentive.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's fascinating on that, and pulled on and out. Now, how's that apply to an adopted child? Because our focus is adopted children. And so obviously, I think what you're saying is some of those experiences before the adoption, before the birth and the adoption, permanently has stayed with, been a factor in their lives?
Correct. And so if we think about epigenetics and the environment prenatally shaping the way our genes unfold in utero, many, many adopted children, well, there's not too many birth mothers who don't experience significant levels of stress when considering adoption. That's stressful in and of itself. But then if you couple to that maybe a lack of prenatal care, maybe attentiveness to self-care during that very stressful period. So what we're having is infants who are developing to prepare to live in an environment in which there may be famine, in which there may not be appropriate care, but then they're born into a completely different environment than their genes prepared them for.
Okay.
Because they were adopted. And so, for example, children who were adopted at birth may still hoard food. And parents will ask, why? They've always had nutrition. They've always had things that we've given them. But if prenatally they didn't receive that, and their genes unfolded in such a way as to make every calorie count and to crave and to make sure that they met their needs, then those children are going to be hoarders and really try to get as much food as they can. They don't even know why they're doing it.
Okay, so what it's saying is that the environment can, particularly before birth, the environment can determine the genes that are active, turn some on, turn them off, or whatever?
Absolutely, absolutely. What will happen is external experiences like stress or nutrition or toxins, they spark signals between neurons, and then that affects the proteins inside a cell. And then these proteins attract or repel enzymes that then turn switches on for genetic markers. And it's really fascinating the way our neurons develop to prepare us for the environment into which we are expected to be born. But for adopted kids, many times they're not born into that environment.
Okay, so the environment, it prepares for the environment that the mother is living in at the time she's carrying the baby. And so if the environment is born into or wind up in a different environment, then there's going to be a little bit of crossways. Now, another question, and maybe you can address this, that I can see. This is so fascinating that we're going to really run out of time quickly. But the therapeutic boarding schools, since the 80s that I'm aware of, it's been pretty standard from 30%, sometimes up to 50%, but 30% of kids with behavioral problems that need to go to a therapeutic boarding school or a treatment center have been adopted. And yet there's what, only about 5%, 3% of the population are adopted?
Yeah, about 2% actually.
2%?
2%.
So it's significantly more. One-third of any of these schools or treatment centers, the kids are going to be adopted. And these are the run-of-the-mill ones, and it's much higher, of course, while your program is 100%. But so it indicates that there's a lot of risk factors in adoption.
Correct. Absolutely. And part of the reason Three-Point Center came about was what we're learning is the genesis of a number of these issues, Lon, is different than a typical child who may be considered ADHD or conduct disordered or oppositional defiant. And this is through studying the neural development that we're looking at. And so what might work for some kids, typically for adopted kids, they need a little less behavioral approach and more of a relational approach and more of a systemic approach involving the adoptive parents, involving the birth family when safe and possible. What we've learned is for many, many of our kids, behavioral interventions simply don't work. If anything, they can reinforce old behaviors. because of neurological development and struggles with authority figures.
Well, one way to say that, I guess, is it backfires. It can backfire if it's behavioral.
Absolutely.
So what it's saying is, particularly an adopted kid, you need some sort of relational type of approach, and work in a family system. It's just more important not knowing anything else. If you know the kid's adopted, then you should stay away from behavioral approaches, which is the gut reaction from people in this society. You know, teach a kid a lesson. And you have to go to work with the whole family, get all the family involved. And I think that's a great idea, getting birth parents involved, because it's going to be a factor, either their absence or their involvement in later life. And also the relational perspective. Am I getting it right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And even if the birth parent is not present, even if there's a safety issue there where we can't directly work with the birth parent, addressing the fact that there is an emptiness there, and most of our kids, you know, they often talk in spatial terms about there's a part of me that's missing. Acknowledging and recognizing that emptiness and that feeling and working with that is so crucial. And what we talk about oftentimes, Lon, is therapeutic parenting, because the parenting that we ask our parents to do is almost antithetical to the traditional parenting that you spoke of. You know, the old simple consequences and black and white. Hey, this is, you did this, this happens.
Yeah.
And
that just doesn't work.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so what we ask parents, you know, we ask parents to look at different modalities with us. And what the research tells us is a large portion of the success of our adoptive kids really is dependent upon the work that adoptive parents do. And their capacity to manage their own emotional responses to what their kids do is a strong variable in the outcomes for their kids. And that's hard. Our adoptive parents are heroes, because we ask a lot of them. And it means taking a look inside themselves as well.
So in a sort of a summary, and then I wanted you to talk a little bit more about Three-Point Center itself. But in a summary, you're saying if a kid's adopted, you have to figure that some of the causes, if they're in trouble, you know, behavioral problems and stuff, that it is coming from the environment their mother was in before they were born.
It has to be considered as a variable, absolutely. Yeah. And oftentimes we talk about fetal alcohol effects and other toxins, and absolutely, those can be catastrophic for kids. But there are also other effects that we're learning about that we probably hadn't considered even 10 years ago.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, tell me a little bit about Three-Point Center. It's been about 3 years now, 2.5 years. How's it doing? And tell us about it. If somebody wants to learn more about it, how they can get a hold of you, too.
Sure. We're so grateful. Well, we work with the best parents in the world. Our adoptive parents are heroes. And I sincerely mean it when I say I think they're the most underappreciated citizens in our country for what they do on behalf of their children. We currently have about 51 students in our program, and then split almost 50-50 down gender lines. Because it's a different model, because we kind of see ourselves as pioneers to some degree in working with this specific population, we're learning a lot about what works, what doesn't work. We make mistakes. We do our best to make sure that we're trying to meet the needs of the kids. We're very excited that in the end of June we should be moving up. We have a new property that we've purchased that we're renovating, everything brand new up there for the kids, and we're so excited about that. We've also opened up a therapeutic boarding school, which we're using as a step down, if you will, to help kids get a little more autonomy, a little more experience in the community, to prepare them better to return home.
Okay, well, very good. Now, how, if somebody wants to talk to you about the school or about what you've been talking about, this is a fascinating topic, how would they get a hold of you?
They can, a few different ways, Lon. They can call us at 435-635-0636. They are welcome to go to our website, which is www.threepointcenter.com. And three is spelled out, and points has an S on the end of it. So it's threepointscenter.com. Mm-hmm. Or they can send an email to us at info@threepointcenter.com, and that'll come straight to me. I'm happy to talk to any of your listeners about these topics. They are fascinating.
So you're a manager that's hands-on and everything regarding this.
Yeah, I my role, as we've grown, my role has changed quite a bit, and now I oversee the research and I oversee the program development and just making sure that everything that we're hearing about what these kids need, we're trying to implement into our program.
Very good. Well, this is Lon Woodbury. Want to thank you very much, Norm. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Norman Thibault. He's the founder and the president of 3 Points Center. That's been involved, active about 2.5 years, 51 kids, doing very well. And we've been talking about what's driving my adopted child. Very fascinating. We just barely introduced the subject, Nora, but thank you very much. This has been great.
Thank you so much, Lon. I so appreciate you and your program.